Welcome to the Eldritch Estate, an establishment dedicated to the bizarre, the dark, and all that is otherworldly. We invite our guests to come and stay a while, to enjoy the haunted hallways, the shrieks of terror and delight, to forget time in our enchantingly disturbing abode. Whether it's for an overnighter or a week-long stay, our hostesses will see to it that you are shocked, horrified, and left morbidly curious about the goings-on here at the estate. Will you take a trip with us? We can't wait for you to see what's in store. Hello, and welcome to episode 1. My name is Dusty.
And I'm Katie.
All right. And we have been best friends since we were 10, and we are older than 10 now. It's been a long time, trust me. And this is going to be our podcast. I'm going to talk a little bit about myself, and then I'm going to let Katie talk a little bit about herself. Then we'll talk a little bit about the podcast, and then we will get into it. So we both live in Arizona, and like I said, we've kind of grown up together. We started going to the same school when we were like 10. And currently I teach music at an elementary school. I'm also into like video gaming, martial arts, and cooking. Do a lot of cooking. I've got 2 dogs and 2 ferrets, and I really like true crime, so that's part of why we're doing this podcast.
Very true. I'm Katie. I'm a hairdresser. I've been behind the chair for like 11 years. I met Dusty when I was 9.
Yeah, like 4th grade, yeah. End of 4th grade, beginning of 5th grade.
The summer of 4th grade, to be very specific. I've got 2 dogs, a 4-year-old daughter, and a super awesome husband.
Her kid is mad cute.
She's the sassiest little person on the face of the planet. To an extreme.
I wonder where she gets that.
I have no idea. I enjoy, like, fitness, running. I like being outside. Plants make me happy.
Yeah. I gotta let you teach me more about making plants live and stuff.
I still Google everything. I've had that plant for 5 years and I Google it almost daily.
All right.
Yep.
Well, we know you don't want to hear much more about us. You want to get into the podcast. So on this podcast, we will mostly cover true crime, but we'll also be delving into cases of hauntings and the paranormal, aliens, conspiracy theories, cults, cryptids, and more. We're really excited to get into our first episode, and today we're going to be talking about the mysterious death of Tamla Horsford. So I'm going to start by telling you about Tamla herself. Tamla Horsford was born on October 10th, 1978, in Kingstown, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, so in the islands. Her parents were Kirtland St. George and Summer St. George, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I did watch a YouTube video on how to pronounce it, but if I'm getting it wrong, please feel free to correct me, friends.
I do like the way you pronounced it, though.
Thank you. In 1989, Tamla moved with her family to the Bronx. There's not too much more about her sort of early life and things like that, but quite a few years later, she met her husband, Leander Horsford, in Florida, who had a daughter from a previous relationship. They married and built a family together, including 5 more children of their own, and at the time of her death, Tamla's youngest son was only 4 years old.
That makes my tummy hurt, poor baby. Yeah.
Tamla was a kind and caring mother to her children, known as a football mom, always shuttling the children to and from practices, games, and events. She was described by all as the life of the party, charismatic, fun. She loved to dance and laugh. And in 2013, when the family moved to Georgia for Leander's job, they relocated to Forsyth County, a primarily white suburban area in the Atlanta metropolitan region. So let's talk a little bit about that town, because it kind of plays a big role in what happens with this case, in my opinion.
Just a smidge.
So, located about 40 miles northeast of Atlanta, Cumming, Georgia is known for its large housing lots, an annual county fair, and a nice downtown scene. Unfortunately, the town is also known for its racism and animosity towards black people. It was the site of a racial cleansing in 1912 when a black man was falsely accused of raping a white woman and another falsely accused of beating a white woman.
That's awful. I did not know that part.
Yeah, the town basically made itself into a huge mob and was attacking black homes and businesses, which resulted in approximately 1,100 black residents being driven from the city.
Woof.
Yeah. Big yikes. In 1987, the National Guard had to be called to defend black activists because, once again, white residents of the town were mobbing and attacking them.
What year was that?
87.
Whoa.
So less than 40 years ago that was happening. On paper, in records, the county claimed to be all white for decades, and even as recently as 1990, records show that the county is home to just 14 black residents.
Excuse me, what?
So, yeah, we're talking about a place that has a history of this, and it's well documented, and it's pretty scary, I would think, if you're somebody that moves out there and you're trying to, you know, have a new career there, buy a house, have a family there, all that kind of stuff.
Just be a person existing.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
In 2014, the local sheriff was forced to resign from a nearby police force after posting photos of himself posing with racist mammy dolls.
What is a mammy doll?
They're these dolls that basically portray black women in a racist way, exaggerating certain physical features or having them dressed in a certain way as if they would be performing certain jobs.
When was this?
This was in 2014.
Excuse me, what?
Yeah. And this sheriff had friendly ties with a politician and business owner who was also involved in law enforcement. These families were all really tightly knit, like any small southern town. They can be seen vacationing together and in the background of campaign photos together, like for the political campaigns. And it looks like from social media posts and photos that these same people were involved in the investigation into Tamla's death. And may serve as the reason why it was not handled entirely well.
Isn't there some kind of law that they have to have it investigated by someone who is outside of, like, so they're unbiased, they come from, like, another town or something?
I'm not sure if that was the case with this one because of the way that the report was filed, because they kind of just breeze through it and they say, oh, it was an accidental death, case closed, no foul play. So if they suspected foul play, perhaps there would have been another department called in to investigate and do the report.
Oh.
But in this case, it was the local authorities.
Right under the rug.
Of course, the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office denies any mishandling of the case and any personal connections that would have affected its outcome. And we want to be clear here that we are not saying one way or the other so that we don't get in any trouble. We're just sort of presenting the facts as well as some of our opinions. This is not necessarily, de facto. This is not exactly what happened according to them or according to news reports. We've just gone around and collected the information that we can, done a little bit of research, and we're presenting it to you, the listener, for you to decide.
My Google research does not make me an expert. I'm just opinionated.
All right, so getting into the case itself. The Forsyth County Sheriff Department ruled that Horsford's death was likely due to a fall from the balcony, citing alcohol in her system and multiple blunt force injuries to her body. On February 20th, 2019, just 3 months after her death, the investigation was closed and the department ruled that there was no evidence of foul play. So let's get into that a little bit. According to an article written by Vibe magazine, a witness was fired from his county court officer position after accessing the incident report internally. So basically using his position to look into the report and access it, according to the report, multiple times he was looking at this report.
I would too.
And it was then that the case garnered public attention. It quickly spread across the internet using hashtag justice for Tam, and readers began to suspect that there was something else going on.
Have you clicked through that hashtag?
I have not. I saw a few tweets that referenced it, but they were mostly just screenshots.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they include photos from that night, and it's almost
even sadder when you see her smiling in the photos and hanging out with her friends, and then
they were her friends.
You remember what happened, and you're like, oh, I can't imagine. So, about that night. On the night of Saturday, November 3rd, 2018, Tamla arrived at a party around 8:30 p.m. It should be noted that she was the only Black woman attending the party of all white men and women, part of the Football Moms Club. The party was to be an adult sleepover, which would include drinks, watching football, and playing games. Tamla had made sure that her family had a nice meal before she left, making dinner for her five sons and husband before heading out to celebrate the birthday of Jean Myers. I was a little confused about the pronunciation of this name. It's spelled J-E-A-N-N-E, so you would think like Jean or Jeannie, but yeah. From the 911 call, when I heard her pronounce her own name, she pronounced it Jean Myers. So mm-hmm. I will do my best to get that correct for the rest of the episode here.
Welcome to being a hairstylist.
So Myers had invited all the partygoers to spend the night so that no one would drink and drive. Tamla brought a small overnight bag and changed into white onesie pajamas with paw prints on them shortly after arriving. Originally, the party was supposed to be all women. However, Myers' boyfriend, Jose Barrera, stuck around, as did Tom Smith and another man named Mike, the husbands of other women at the party. The entire group was made up of 9 women and 3 men, not including one husband who only came by to drop off and pick up his wife. This group would later come to be known as the Forsyth 12 by those who were advocating for Horsford, and out of the whole group, 8 women, including Tamla, planned to stay the night. So the women stayed inside watching the LSU-Alabama game, and the men watched football in the Myers' finished basement. Tamla was the only habitual smoker in the group, and occasionally stepped out to have a cigarette. She had also smoked some marijuana, though Myers had asked her to stop, mentioning that her boyfriend was a pre-trial officer and, quote, did not approve. I guess he was also kind of, like, joking around with her and teasing her and saying, like, oh, you're, like, the female Bob Marley and stuff like that.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. So we'll get into what the toxicology report does say, but it sounds like a pretty casual evening of hanging with friends, staying in, having some fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other activities that night went on without issue. The men eventually joined the women upstairs, and guests played Cards Against Humanity, talked, ate, and drank together. Although Tamla had been drinking that night and was found to have a rather high blood alcohol level, guests commented that she didn't seem particularly drunk or without her faculties. The guests who weren't staying the night began to leave around 11:30 p.m., while other guests went to bed over the course of the next few hours. The last person to see Tamla Horsford alive was Bridget Fuller. She was getting picked up by her husband around 1:47 a.m. Horsford was eating a bowl of gumbo and told Fuller that she planned to smoke a cigarette and go to bed. The women exchanged parting words, and Fuller left. Between 1:47 and 1:57 a.m., the home security system registered the back door of the house open, and then close, and then open one more time. So there's no register of it closing again. Open, and then close, and then open again.
So the door was left open.
According to the security system. I don't know if it's one of those things where it, like, mostly closed but didn't fully latch so it didn't register, or if it was, like, wide open, or what went on with that.
But tinfoil hat, is the footage gone from the last close?
We are going to talk about that. Okay. So, on the morning of November 4th, 2018, so technically the next morning, again, this all happened at about 2 a.m., but this is later that morning. The sun is up. The day is starting. Myers' aunt, Madeline Lombardi, woke up around 8:45 and went into the kitchen to make coffee. As she glanced out the window, she noticed something out in the yard. It was Tamla, lying face down in the yard and not moving. According to Lombardi's report, she dropped to her knees and said a prayer, and then went upstairs to find Myers.
Excuse me, what?
Right? Isn't that bizarre? Like,
she left her out there, face down, on the ground, to pray and then go inside.
Didn't go and check on her. And I can understand seeing something like that and being kind of overwhelmed, and if you're a religious person, you may want to say a prayer, but
yes.
I would feel your first response would be to go and go to that person.
Make sure she's breathing.
Or call 911 yourself right then and there.
Yeah.
Something. So she runs upstairs to find Myers. She then tells her that her, quote, friend from the islands, end quote, was outside and that something was wrong with her.
On the 911 call?
This is just her reporting it to the homeowner. She runs upstairs to the bedroom to tell Jean Myers about her friend.
With a sprinkle of racism.
Exactly. Really? And it's true that Tamla did grow up in the Grenadines and the islands, but like I said, she's been living in the United States since 1989.
And why not just my friend?
Yeah, it's sort of, it's that assumption, right?
Yeah.
Like, we can't just say these things. So getting into the 911 call, again, Myers was reported, Lombardi told Myers about the body around 8:45 to 8:57.
Mm-hmm.
Forsyth County 911 received a call shortly before 9 a.m. Myers and her boyfriend Barrera are both heard on the call. Barrera said, quote, "She's not moving one bit. She's not breathing. She's completely face down in the yard. She is stiff," end quote. And then Myers adds, quote, "She was drinking, and it looks like, I'm guessing, maybe she fell off the balcony," end quote. So the 911 call is really strange because they've already sort of determined, or they're making speculation, that this is how the death occurred to the 911 operator. They haven't really gone over to her. They haven't figured out what's happening with her. And they're sort of already, in my opinion, planting this idea, right?
Yeah.
Which I guess is one way to deal with some sort of traumatic event like that, is to try and figure out what happened. But
like, to reason with it. But that usually happens, like, well later in the process of grieving something. Like,
right.
Reasoning comes later.
And,
Or bargaining.
Jean is the one who initially makes the call and is giving her information to the 911 operator. But then Jose takes over, Jose Barrera, the boyfriend. And he's giving more information. He works as a pretrial officer, so he's involved with law enforcement to some mm-hmm. capacity. And even though he takes over the call and is trying to give information, he can be heard asking Jean questions. And he says, oh, you know, I've only really met her once before. But then he keeps calling her Tam, as if they're closer.
Buddy old pal.
Yeah.
Eek.
He mentions that she's a friend of Jean's, his girlfriend, not his, really. And then he mentions the security cameras. So he says that security cameras were pointed at the backyard. And
on the 911 call, you can hear him saying this?
Yes, and that they probably should have been recording, and that they would have captured what happened, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's later found the security camera's batteries were dead and that they didn't record anything.
Coincidence? I think not.
Yeah. And like I said, throughout the 911 call, part of which was redacted, so I wasn't able to listen to the whole thing, he's asking her for more information. Yeah, I was able to listen to part of it.
Eey, I want to hear it later.
Absolutely. And you can find that online. It's very strange. Their whole vibe is like, obviously, you know, they're stressed, they're confused, they're a little scared mm-hmm. by what's happening. But like I said, it's just odd. And
yeah.
And I've never had to make a 911 call, so I don't know how I would act in that situation, but, like...
I mean, I have had to make a 911 call, but not for, like, a body.
Right. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
So he's asking her for a ton of info, like, how many people were there at the party, how many of them left, when they left, and it's just, like, we're already, again, trying to get this timeline going, but this is just the 911 call. Police haven't arrived. And
they're,
again,
like, talking their story out already.
Yeah, and I know part of the 911 operator's job is to keep you on the line and get as much information as possible.
Yeah.
And that's what gets interesting, is Barrera also makes a note during the 911 call to a cut on Tamla's wrist, and he says, "I don't know if this cut was self-inflicted." And the part of the 911 call that's redacted, obviously I can't hear what's going on, it's been redacted, but right after they come back to the recording and you can hear them again,
mm-hmm.
the 911 operator is asking Barrera, "Do you think that she was suicidal?" So, like, who knows what they were talking about before that
redacted
part? Exactly. And
oh
then
my gosh.
He makes this comment about this cut on her wrist, right? So, police arrive at the scene, and Tamla was pronounced dead at the scene, and her body was sent for autopsy. She was 40 years old. Even before the report was completed, the working theory among the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office was that the death was due to an accidental fall from the second-story balcony. In February of 2019, nearly 4 months after Tamla's death, the FSCO made an official statement. The State of Georgia Medical Examiner's final report indicated positive results for THC and a blood alcohol level of 0.238, which is almost 3 times the legal limit to drive, but that's also why
that's 23% of your blood.
That's why Jean was having everyone stay the night, and that's why Tamla was sleeping over. She wasn't going to drink and drive.
She wasn't acting drunk.
Exactly.
Like, she wasn't out of her senses. She wasn't acting exuberantly inebriated or anything.
Exactly. And I have notes about that a little bit later on here. So the toxicology report also listed an anxiety medication. I didn't feel that that was super relevant, but I did want to include that information. It was basically a generic Xanax.
If you mix like a barbiturate or a benzodiazepine with alcohol, that slows your heart rate down to the part like to the point where you could die.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, they're both depressants. It literally like shuts your heart off.
I feel like though, if you were on an anxiety med, you would know that, and you would be either accustomed to drinking on it. Oh, bro. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, what if they dropped that in her drink?
Oh, man.
Speculatively not saying that it actually happened because I don't want to be sued.
Right, and I don't have any information about whether she had been taking that regularly or not. Mr. Horsford was very clear that he wanted a lot of things about Tamla kept off of news and things like that.
Because it doesn't matter. She was maybe speculatively murdered. Speculatively,
yeah.
That's a mouthful.
The speculation, yes. So, yeah, and we're, like I said, we, the podcasters, are not saying either way. We're presenting information and you can draw your own conclusions. But that is an interesting perspective that I had not considered.
Seems suspicious.
So this blood alcohol content level is typically associated with blackouts, loss of coordination, and vomiting. However, guests confirmed that Tamla seemed totally in control. You can see photos and videos of this night. She's smiling and laughing, having a great time, singing happy birthday to Jean Myers. And in a separate interview conducted after the investigation, Tamla's sister-in-law also makes note that Tamla never went too far with alcohol, would never be falling over drunk. Apparently she could handle her liquor.
And that's beyond handling your liquor. If your 23% of your blood is alcohol, and I'm not a scientist or a doctor or any of that, so if that's not how that works, then that is what that is. But that level of intoxication, like, I would be actually dead.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't drink, so.
Fun fact, Dusty's never had a drink.
I'm that person who takes, like, a little sip of NyQuil to, you know, either when I'm sick or to help get some sleep at night, and I don't even make it to the bed, so.
She lit.
We're not gonna experiment with alcohol at all.
And I have the alcohol tolerance of an infant. I still drink.
Despite this information, the FSCO determined that her death was due to an accidental fall, citing the marijuana and alcohol in her system. The actual toxicology report reads acute ethanol intoxication, which is more commonly known as alcohol poisoning. As
but
well
if you
as
have alcohol poisoning, like, you're beer shitting yourself to death. You're not, like, smiling and taking coherent photos and stuff.
Everyone said that she was fine. I think there was another interview I read where it was said, like, quote, it would take a excuse the profanity, a shitload to knock her on her ass, end quote.
Yeah.
And then the door alarm, too. That's the other thing that they pointed to. They said, well, she probably went out to the balcony to have a cigarette and either fell over the railing on the balcony or was sitting on the railing and fell backwards.
Does the front door have a log of when it was open and shut?
And it may, but the only person using the front door would have probably been Fuller, the lady who last saw her alive, who was getting picked up by her husband and left.
Okay, but tinfoil hat, is there another entrance into the house? Because if they went out there and done moited her or planted the body or whatever, and they just came in through another door that didn't have a sensor on it, then it would look like open, shut, open.
Especially if we have this, like, well, the batteries were dead on the security camera. Like, what other batteries are dead? What else is not working as intended? So that's interesting. Barrera also claimed to have found an unlit cigarette and lighter on the balcony slash upper deck, but he just says this. He never presents these items. They're never collected as evidence. There's
they
never
collect cigarette butts as evidence.
It's an unlit cigarette. So that's the other thing. Was she smoking or had she not lit it yet?
Yeah.
What is it? So the case was closed and the reports were made public, but Horsford's family, still mourning the loss of Tamla, a warm and caring wife and mother, were confused by the reports. There were just too many holes and too many questions still remaining.
And, like, that's their daughter, their mother, their wife, their friend, and, like, this whole suspicious thing is just swept under the rug.
Exactly. How would you feel if your mom, wife, whatever, went to a birthday party and then suddenly is found dead in the yard?
I would be outside with a torch. Like, it would be an ugly situation. You again, excuse profanity, but also I have a potty mouth, so probably get used to it. What the fuck?
Right.
Like, I would be burning that bitch down. You don't mess with my mom.
Right, I can't imagine. Okay, so according to the autopsy report, Tamla had sustained blunt force trauma to her head, neck, torso, and extremities. Now, this is the county medical examiner. The family conducted a separate autopsy with another medical examiner who found further injuries sustained.
That weren't listed on the initial autopsy?
Exactly.
Ooh.
She had several abrasions to her face, four types of hemorrhages to her skull and brain, a dislocated wrist, and cuts along her arms and legs. She had also suffered a broken neck and had a laceration to the right ventricle of her heart, which is basically one of the muscles in your heart.
Like, getting stabbed?
It was a laceration, so yeah, a cut, but to the heart. So we don't know, like, what happened, right? Jesus. And I feel like you wouldn't sustain these injuries from a fall. You know what
no,
I'm saying?
No, that sounds like a sharp object or something.
And I looked this up a little bit later, but the height of the balcony was about 14 feet.
Is this the case where they didn't have autopsy photos?
Correct.
Bro. Okay, I've listened to the Morbid episode, and she said that literally never happens.
Right.
Like, if that happens, you done lose your job.
Exactly.
That's a, like, a terminable.
Yes, you can be terminated for that.
Yes, that. It's one of those offenses. Like, you don't do that.
Exactly.
You straight up just did not do your job at that point.
Exactly. And the family lawyer mentions that in his letter that we will get to later as well.
Eesh.
Let's see. Kind of lost my place. Excuse me.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. Here we go. Lead investigator Mike Christian also commented on the position of Tamla's body at the crime scene. She was found face down, with her head and face completely centered and pointed towards the earth. Not, like, turned to the right or to the left. Like, mm-hmm. if you think about, like, laying on the ground, you might turn your head to one side or the other.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've never fallen from 14 feet, but your face completely pointed at the ground...
You try to catch yourself if you're falling. And I mean, but if she's that intoxicated on two depressants, you may not have that cognizance.
I just don't feel like that's how a body would fall. I feel like the head would cant to one side or the other, at least.
I mean, again, I've never fallen from a second floor balcony, but
yeah.
I don't think you would fall like that.
And the other thing is, like I was saying...
Was there crime scene photos?
Yes and no. I found crime scene photos that did not include the body. I found ones that just had the markers of where the body had been.
That's suspicious.
And those photos just may not be public. Maybe they exist somewhere. Yeah. I don't know. We can only speculate.
Speculatory.
Speculatively.
Speculatively.
We think. Yes. The specs. We spec.
Specking it.
And so the balcony itself is 14 feet, and then with the railing, it's about, you know, like a mid-waist, mid-hip height railing is about 3 feet, so 17 feet total.
And you'd have to, like, ass over tea kettle to get over that thing.
Exactly. And I feel like you would
be... How tall is she?
I don't know, actually. I don't have that information.
I'm Googling it.
You could probably be severely injured by a fall like that.
That's like falling off the top floor of a shopping mall.
Yeah.
Like, broken. That's gonna fuck you up.
But 14 feet, I mean, my house has 9 foot ceilings.
I was like 19. Damn, have I never looked up in your
I live in a
house?
Mansion, you guys, on a teacher's salary.
It's actually an estate.
So yeah, I feel like you would have some broken bones. You would be pretty bumped and bruised up, but dead from a fall at that height? I don't know.
I don't know. That doesn't... Suspicious.
Suspicious.
A suspicious thing.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Yeah, also get used to us singing because one, music teacher, and two, us.
And also attention deficit disorder.
So, yeah, are you Googling that?
I'm trying to figure out how tall she was.
Okay, we're going to pause for just a second. All right, we're back, and we were unable to find that information, but we've had a snack, and we've made some tea, and we're ready to continue.
Squirrel.
So we were talking about the rather strange positioning of Tamla's body at the crime scene. A further report indicates that her legs were completely straight, extended behind her, with both feet pointing to the right. And then here's where there's some discrepancy. At first, her body was reported as having both arms down at her side. But then later, it was reported her right arm was close to her body, down at her side, and that her left arm was extended and slightly bent at the elbow.
Her legs were straight.
Mm-hmm. Completely straight.
And both feet were pointed to the right.
Yes.
And then she was face down.
With her head not tilted to one side or the other. Completely, like, nose to earth, face down.
Okay, arms. I'm trying to be the body right now.
Right, and at first the arms were down at the sides.
Uh-huh.
But then, later, one arm is out and bent away from her body. So we don't know, like, was that body moved? Was it placed? How did it move? Because at this point, if something happened between the hours of, you know, 1 a.m. to 2 a.m., and now it's 9 a.m., I'm assuming rigor has to have set in at this point.
He said on the 911 call
she's stiff, that's right. And he didn't want to turn over the body when he was talking to the 911 operator.
Flip someone over to, like, look at their face and see if they're breathing?
Right. And then the other thing is that he eventually does do that because he goes to check for breathing or a pulse. And if I remember correctly, at the finish of the 911 call, he's basically saying, I can't tell. I don't know.
Aren't you a trained professional?
It said he was a pre-trial officer, was his official job description.
Okay, so not like an in-the-field police officer.
Right.
Who would have more, like, EMT, life-saving type of skill.
It sounded more like he was in a, like, clerical-type position, dealing with reports and files and things like that.
Ah.
That's what I garnered from it, anyway.
Okay.
So, in my notes here, I mentioned that if she had fallen from the balcony, it's kind of a strange position for her to land in and to be found in. I talk again here in my notes about the height of the balcony with the railing. It's about 17 feet if she had indeed gone over the railing. The crime scene photos that I was mentioning earlier show that she landed very near the house, hardly any projection away from the balcony, which I assume if you did go over the railing, you would fall pretty much straight down.
If you're unconscious.
Yeah, and you can see...
If you're trying to catch yourself, you're going to go further.
No? Yeah, or if you were thrown or something like that.
Yeah.
Again, we are not saying either way. We are just kind of spitballing.
Speculatizing.
Putting out some ideas.
Speculatory.
Theorizing. And the excessive injuries to other parts of her body, according to the second medical examiner and the family attorney, they may suggest defensive wounds. The parallel scratches on her arms, her forearms.
Or like she was dragged, maybe?
I don't know about that.
It was her arms and her legs is what I'm thinking. If they're all like line-type scratches and you're being dragged somewhere.
Somewhere. It's a pretty grassy yard. However, their initial theory when they arrived at the crime scene was that she had fallen from the ground level. And Dr. Andrew Koopmeiners, associate medical examiner with the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, stated that these injuries could not have been caused by a ground level fall. However, there were scrapes on her shins consistent with the edging of the deck. On the ground level. So these scratches look like they could have been caused by this patio on the ground level.
Okay.
So that's why they thought ground level fall. But then the medical examiner says there's no way she could have gotten these injuries from a ground level fall. And that's when we see this balcony fall theory start to take hold in the investigation.
Oh.
Right.
Oh.
And again, I don't understand how you get abrasions to the face like that, a laceration to your heart muscle like that, and the severe damage to the skull and brain
is
from that.
Is it internal laceration? Like, there's no puncture wound on the outside, or is there a puncture wound on the outside?
I couldn't find anything about that. I do know that a laceration is a cut.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. So further information on the police investigation. Evidence may have also been mishandled or not collected at all. The scene was never secured, so we have people walking in and out, going all over the place, contaminating this crime scene.
Well, and usually, like, if you're on the phone with 911 and there's been a suspected... Well, I mean, I guess they're telling her already that she fell.
Right. Well, and this house is full of people who spent the night who are now, I assume, waking up and finding their friend dead.
And wouldn't they want to, like, go through and just rule out the fact that it was foul play?
You would think, and police were on the scene quickly. The call was made about, like, 8:57, 8:59. Police were on scene in about 9:07, about 10 minutes. So that's, one, a really fast response time. And two, the first thing you do is secure a perimeter.
Yeah.
You,
that's
you,
what the yellow tape is
yellow
for.
Yellow tape. You tape scene. It off. Crime scene. Nobody comes in or out. I can see the homeowners being there to be present, but everyone else should have probably been
but
away from
that. But they still should
that.
Have been pulled, like, away to the side out of where they're going to be leaving, like, fibers and all that other stuff to...
Taking crime scene photos.
Ugh.
Okay. And part of what I read said that these things were not collected because there was no suspicion of foul play. So... The scene was never secured, and Barrera told officers that he had touched the body, saying he moved her leg to try and see if she was still alive. So again, we're being told, like, this body may not be in the position that it was actually found in.
And if I'm gonna check you to see if you're alive, I'm gonna check your face, not your leg.
Yeah.
That's...
So we don't know what else may have been moved, hidden, or tampered with between the time of the 911 call and officers arriving on scene, or even, honestly, prior to the 911 call. Barrera also said in his interview, like I said earlier, that he found an unlit cigarette and lighter on the balcony and moved them prior to discovering the body. So you went out on the deck and you found an unlit cigarette and lighter, but you didn't notice the body right underneath the deck? You moved it, but you didn't... You hadn't called 911 yet? Or, like, what?
And...
I don't get that at all.
Why bring up that detail when you're just calling to be like, hey, somebody is dead in my yard?
Right. Again, it seems like information that wasn't necessarily asked for, but they're offering to help contribute to this timeline, this story.
A narrative.
Exactly. So, because the death was ruled accidental, no fingerprints were collected. Fingernail clippings from Tamla were not collected. A sexual assault kit was not done as part of the autopsy. And this was all given the presumed nature of the death.
But don't you have to rule out other things? Or, like, I don't know, that just seems like an odd way to find someone to not want to rule out foul play.
Yeah, and it may have been that they were just looking to kind of do an open and shut on this and be done with it.
Was it a holiday?
Well,
that sounds terrible. But...
It was November 3rd to November 4th. There was the big LSU versus Alabama game, which they're in Georgia for this, so... Yeah, I really don't know.
Ooh.
I did find that it was daylight savings time, which we don't do that here in Arizona, so I have no idea. I had to Google that. But... It may have skewed the time stamps on certain things, like the door. Because, like, we set our clocks forward or back for daylight savings time, but certain things don't adjust on their own. Like, for example, a house security system or a security camera or, like, the clock in your car, for example.
Yeah, your VCR.
So, was it 1:57 a.m. or was it midnight? Was it, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I mention again here that he said there are cameras installed in the backyard, but it was found that the batteries were dead, and the cameras didn't actually record anything, which...
Okay, but did they check to see if the batteries were dead, or were the batteries just mysteriously...
gone. Yeah, dead. Or was this just, again, taken at his word?
And was a homeowner's fingerprints on the thing that checked the batteries for the camera? Or was somebody else?
Yeah, and then I mentioned here again that there were no photos taken, or if there were, they've not been released. The Georgia Bureau of Investigations and Forsyth County Sheriff's Office claim that they're waiting on approval or a release of some sort from the family for these to be made available. But again, the family wants answers. They want more insight. So the fact that these photos exist, but they're saying they don't have permission from the family.
But didn't the family's lawyer make a statement about that? No?
Yes, he did. Ooh. So that's also strange.
That's weird.
Police communication during the investigation also could have been better. Mike Christian, the lead investigator, was hypothesizing about the theory of a fall from ground level, and he brought this information to Tamla's husband, Leander. The family was struggling to understand how Tamla could have died from a fall at ground level, and when they questioned investigators further about this theory, it was suddenly dismissed in favor of this balcony fall theory. So this grew to form a kind of sense of distrust between the victim's family and law enforcement.
I could see it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to figure out, like, again, how did my wife, mother, die at this party? And they're like, well, she may have fallen. Like, you shouldn't even be having these conversations with the victim's family at this point.
No.
I wouldn't be theorizing and speculating in front of the family like that. Especially so early in the investigation.
Well, and you're in a position of service to the family to, like, make justice and figure out what happened to their loved one. Like, just so you can securely say, you know, it was an accident.
Right.
Or whatever.
Or we're still looking into it and we'll let you know as soon as we have some information to share.
It seems kind of disrespectful to be like, oh, she probably fell.
Right.
Maybe.
And to just sort of push that theory on them. Oh, we really think it was this, and not even really wait for the autopsy to come back.
Well, and if the family is questioning it, then you should probably look into it a little more for the family.
Yeah. And I think as we get further into these episodes, we'll find that this happens a lot, where the family is wanting more answers, or the family feels they know their family member really well. Strange how that works, right? Mm-hmm. And law enforcement or government officials are saying, no, they probably just ran away, or they're probably just blowing off steam, or they probably just fell. And it's really disappointing. We really want to see a more thorough investigation from a lot of these departments. So a fellow party attendee and friend of Tamla's, Stacy Smith, also expressed her doubts about the findings of the investigation. She's quoted as saying, I don't get it at all. I mean, I've been on that deck like a million times. Like, I've looked and I've tried. End quote. In regards to a theory that Tamla may have leaned over the railing to vomit or may have been sitting on the railing to smoke a cigarette. And Stacy also noted that Tamla wasn't acting sick. Despite her high blood alcohol content level, witnesses from the party and video of that night supports that Tamla was fine. Oh, here's the quote I was mentioning earlier. In an interview with Fuller, that's the last person to see Tamla alive.
The one whose husband came and picked her up at, yes, like, 1 or 2 in the morning.
I was going through my notes and I was like, and then Fuller, who is Fuller? So yeah, she's the lady that last saw Tamla, said goodnight, and Tamla had told her she was going to smoke a cigarette and go to bed. Mm-hmm. She states that Horsford was a, quote, seasoned drinker, end quote, and it would take a, quote, enormous amount to knock her on her ass, end quote. Another friend of Tamla's, I'm probably going to butcher this name, so I apologize, Diane Koulavaris, said she got really inconsistent stories from the other people at the party. She said the theory, quote, just doesn't make sense, not when everyone there said she was fine.
Word.
And then I do have a side story.
And that's from somebody who was at the party.
Exactly.
So they're like, that's weird.
Uh-huh. Wow. Two people at the party, Fuller and Smith. And Smith was the one whose husband was also there.
Sorry if I'm shuffling around. I gotta pull my pants up.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
I gotta stay decent, even though y'all can't see me.
Yeah, that's one of the big perks to podcasting, is we can just look like a potato and you guys can still enjoy this content.
I'm a potato.
I'm a potato.
I'm a potato.
Okay, yeah, there is a lawsuit involved with this whole thing as well. In February 2019, Jose Barrera, boyfriend of the homeowner and party host Jean Myers, used his job in law enforcement to access Tamla's incident report, as well as Myers' name record within the records management system database.
Myers, who's Myers?
The homeowner, okay. The lady throwing the party.
Word.
And it looks like he may have been looking at her name record in regards to a, like, stalker incident that she had earlier. But the main point here is that he was accessing these records on company property, on company time, when he really had no business accessing them. And that's where the real issue lies.
Is that a felony?
I don't know about that, but it was grounds for his dismissal.
Oh.
Yes.
Terminable.
Yes, the Terminator came and was like,
"You fired.
You're fired."
Do the job.
Tamla's friend Michelle Wynn Graves helped bring this information to light as part of an ongoing conflict between herself and the Forsyth 12. That's all of the people who attended the party. A few weeks later, 7 of the partygoers, including Myers and Barrera, filed a lawsuit against Graves for defamation, citing Facebook posts that accused them of being responsible for Tamla's death. Graves is Tamla's best friend, and so obviously she's really upset, and she wants answers. So she was making these posts sort of insinuating, like, all these people were at this party and no one saw what happened, and so now they're suing her for defamation.
Which, again, we're not saying anybody's guilty.
Right.
We are just presenting information.
And it is a really unfortunate situation because all parties involved are receiving death threats and really violent messages. The people who are fighting for advocacy for Tamla and more information and a reopening of the case, as well as people who were at the party who, in my opinion, may or may not be involved.
Well, even some of the people at the party were saying it was weird, so it's not like all of them were involved, it doesn't seem to me.
And I'll be honest, if I'm at a sleepover and I'm asleep, I ain't hear nothing, I ain't see nothing, I am dead to the world, I am asleep like a rock.
On God.
And like,
I've slept in a house with you many a time, and I could literally set off a bomb and you would not wake up until I like shook you and then ran so I didn't get punched.
Exactly. So maybe there are people that really didn't see anything, really didn't hear anything until everyone's waking up and finding out what happened later in the morning, you know? So Graves' personal information, including her phone number, address, and email, were spread around, and then, like I said, she began receiving death threats. And I found something somewhere else talking about how there was a USB drive with her personal information, and she was...
Oh, I read something about that when I was trying to figure out how tall she was.
She was trying to get a hold of it, and it had been found, but then suddenly it went missing again. And she believes that this information was shared with 5 women who attended the party, and she is pretty certain that those threats against her and her family, most specifically her and her mother, were coming from these people.
Oh, gosh.
At this time, the lawsuit against Graves has been dismissed, but 5 of the remaining members have chosen to appeal. However, Myers and Barrera have dropped from the suit, the homeowner and her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
They've dropped from the defamation suit, but the other 5 are going to appeal. A lot of this information is from a Rolling Stone magazine published in July of 2020, so I will link that in the show notes, as well as a couple of other sources that I pulled information from. So, in regards to reopening the case, in the summer of 2020, during the Black Lives Matter events and movement that were sparked by George Floyd's death, a lot of celebrities such as 50 Cent and T.I. called for a reopening of the case. Tamla's name came up again. Mm-hmm. People were carrying signs, again, justice for Tam. They want a reopening, a reinvestigation to find out what's going on. As of June 18th, 2020, the Georgia Bureau of Investigations has agreed to reopen the case, but did not specify when the investigation would begin. a website has been made in her honor. It's justicefortam.org. You can visit that website, you can call phone numbers, you can sign petitions, and you can help be a part of the voice that's calling for a second investigation, if you so feel.
Word. Do it.
And family attorney Ralph Hernandez, this is the letter we were referencing earlier, he's also called for a reopening of the case. In his letter, he states, quote, "It appears Tamla was involved in a struggle. There were abrasions consistent with that scenario. There were parallel scratches to one arm. Since they were fresh, photos would not have proven recent use of defensive force. There was an X-ray, yet the injury noted as the cause of death appears nowhere." End quote. So this is in reference to the second autopsy done by another medical examiner hired by the family that found all of these other injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And they do an X-ray, but they never say, like, cause of death. What is the specific injury that caused the death?
No, didn't say, or it hasn't been released?
I don't know.
Okay.
Because they mentioned that she has a broken neck.
Yeah.
You can die from that. They mentioned the laceration to her heart muscle. I don't know. You can probably die from that.
I think that lacerating your heart's probably, like, one of the 100 ways to die.
Probably bad.
1,000 ways to die?
Whatever 1,000 ways to die. And so under, like, you know, you're filing a report, cause of death. What is it?
Meh.
Right. We have, oh, well, it was a fall. But, like, what was the injury or injuries that led this to happen, that caused this, that...
Well, and they found her the next day. It's not like she had been decomposed for so long that they couldn't... I mean, again, I'm not a scientist. I have no idea how that actually works, but...
Right.
You would think with, like, injuries being as fresh as they were, you would have some kind of diagnostic reason to say that she died.
Yeah, almost like that's the reason for doing an autopsy.
Well, and if you fall from whatever height... Typically, if you fall, then your cause of death would be, you know, for example, internal bleeding from impact.
Right.
That's crazy that that's just not filled out.
Yes. And like we mentioned earlier, there's photos and videos of that night showing Tamla smiling and laughing, having a good time, totally fine. But the inconsistent stories, the missing or mishandled evidence, the gaps of information missing from the timeline, and the mysterious nature of her death and the way she was found is just really strange. It leaves way more questions than answers. And
when they reopen this, we need to do a follow-up.
Absolutely. And like I said, we gathered this information from a few different sources, news articles, a few other podcasts. I listened to the Morbid podcast, We Love the Morbid Girls, Crime Junkie, as well as Cases of Color, to get some of our information here.
Word. I referenced that Rolling Stone article, too, when I was reading through, just trying to find out how tall she was.
Right, and it is difficult to find information about this case because, like we said, there are so many questions still, and there's still some gaps and things that we just don't know.
Well, and things that probably won't be released just to maintain privacy for the family, because they're obviously grieving the horrible death of their loved one.
Absolutely, and we did find, you know, that Tamla's husband, Leander, was very specific about keeping certain information about Tamla off of the internet. They wanted to preserve some of her memory. They don't want photos of the children or the names of the children shared anywhere, so we're going to obviously be respectful of that. We're going to share, like we said, some information in our show notes, as well as probably a little bit on our social media, but we will not be sharing any of those photos or names or anything like that. So, take from that what you will. That is the tragic tale of Tamla Horsford.
I hope they find out what actually happened.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it takes it away, but at least put the people responsible away for
some closure.
There's no reason. That's awful.
Yeah, even if we can just definitively say, this is what happened.
I mean, like, maybe some reform for the town, because some of the things that I read were awful.
Right. And what we were talking about earlier, like, there's a history here, and so it does not reflect well to have this kind of thing happening. And I'm sure it's really scary, like I said, to be someone living there with all of this going on. Well, I think it's time for the outro.
I think it is.
This is the end of our first episode, you guys!
We did it!
Thank you so much for visiting us. We've been your hostesses, Dusty.
And Katie.
And we hope you've enjoyed your stay. And remember, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Also, please follow our Instagram account, at The Eldritch Estate. Not at Eldritch Estate, that's a pretty cool house where you can apparently do photos and scenery, but The Eldritch Estate. TheEldritchEstate at The Eldritch Estate on Instagram, and we will see you guys next time.
We also have a Gmail if you'd like to send us anything.
Yes, case suggestions, story ideas. We're also thinking about doing listener tales, so if you have some spooky ghost stories or paranormal activity, feel free to send that in.
Tell us about your lives.
And that is at the, or excuse me, not at The Eldritch Estate. That is The Eldritch Estate at gmail.com.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we will listen, or we will hope you listen next time, and bye for now.
Okay, love you, bye.